Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's AURUSmedical.com.
This is the PT Pinecast. A podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pinecast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
The best conversations happen at happy hour. The next episode of the PT Pinecast starts right now. Our next guest is a renowned healthcare researcher, consultant, educator, and advocate. She is the chief executive officer of 3E Services, an executive consulting firm. She advises clients in policy, research, and marketing strategies that enable greater and more sophisticated use of technology for operational improvements. She's an internationally recognized expert in cancer rehabilitation and lymphedema. She has co-authored over 40 peer-reviewed publications, book chapters, and is the co-author of the book 100 Questions and Answers About Lymphedema. Her work and research findings have been foundational in promoting the prospective surveillance model for cancer rehabilitation. Up next in the PT Pinecast, Nicole Stout. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm so excited to be here.
We got to clink glasses.
Yeah, clink glasses. Thank you for accommodating my non-pint.
First question is always the hardest. What are we drinking today?
Vodka tonic.
Vodka tonic.
And I'm Tito's kind of girl.
You're Tito's tonic. Yes. I'm Tito's soda.
Perfect. Make good company. Thank you. Yes, and thank you.
All right. So what does a consultant do? Because you work for 3E, and I did some background research. I looked into you, and I looked at the website. Slick website. Looks good. Who hires you? Who works with you? What do you do? Tell me.
So I used to say a consultant comes into your office and looks at the clock on the wall and tells you what time it is.
Okay.
Right? So that's my job. I come into your office and I look at your data and I tell you what's up with it.
Okay.
You know, that's kind of my goal. So who hires us? We do a lot of federal contracting, primarily with executives in the federal government, chief information officers, chief data officers, chief technical officers.
Of what? Like branches? Or like...
Different agencies and administration. So my biggest client right now is the Federal Aviation Administration.
They're pretty big. I've heard of them.
It's pretty big. FAA.
They're pretty big.
So I know more about bird strikes and runway incursions and loss of separation because the FAA takes in an enormous amount of data. Radar data, cockpit data, information about pilots and their licensure and their medical status. A lot like healthcare, right? Lots of data. And what I learned in starting to work with the FAA is everybody who has data has the same problems. Data is just data. People don't know how to...
A lot of ones and zeros. What do I do with it now?
People don't know how to take it, put it together, and look at it in a consistent, cohesive way, interpret it, and actually make changes based on the data that they see in the output from
effective
the data.
Effective changes.
Right. We talk about actionable insight from your data. Because
that sounds like a consultant word. Yeah.
It's a great consultant word. And, you know, it's lots of letters. You type it out. It looks good on a report. But that's really the key, right? And it's the same clinically. We take in a lot of data from a patient, but we interpret it, and then we act on it. So we create a treatment plan based on the risk factors, based on the evidence, based on the data that we collect. FAA is no different.
I was going to say, what are you doing with the FAA?
So I'm helping them to develop an enterprise platform to analyze their data. Right, nobody does. So what that means is we're building a big data enterprise system for them. We're building a cloud platform.
A place to put information.
A place to put all their information. We're looking at all of their systems across the whole FAA and saying, all right, you've got data sources here that are the same data sources here. We're going to bring them together on the cloud. We're going to ingest them and put them in one place, basically.
Okay.
We're going to clean them up so that your people don't have to enrich the data. And we're going to host it here on this cloud environment. The cloud gives you a ridiculous amount of storage capability,
right,
more than you could ever get on your hard drive,
right,
in your office. So we've got enormous capability to store data. And then the cloud also gives you the ability to do amazing processing. So when you have big data, everybody talks about they've got big data and we want to use our big data. Well, you've got to go slow to go fast, right? So you can't just take all your data and start analyzing it. It means nothing. You've got to put it in a common place. You've got to make sure you're working with sources of data that are correct, right, that have good quality, and that are meaningful. Once you do that, you need processing power that lets you analyze large amounts of data. So the cloud offers that. So I'm advising the Office of Information Technology and the CIO, and now the Chief Data Officer at the FAA, around how to set up that platform, how to analyze that data, and then how to take it and make changes in safety, in deployment of flights, in flight trajectory and flight path, and helping them to better understand how to use their data to make operational changes.
But Nicole, you're a physical therapist.
Yeah, I know, that's the part. I feel like I got them all fooled.
We're not talking about anything. We're talking about bird strike here.
No, exactly.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about bird strikes, and
so
we're talking about runway incursions.
How did you get into this? Do you have some more background in statistics and stuff?
Exactly. I spent the better part of 10 years at the Department of Defense running two clinical trials on cancer morbidity.
Now this is making
sense. This is the physical therapy part, right?
Got it.
But what I learned is my skill set in problem solving, in analyzing statistics, and analyzing output of data and information, and translating that into clinical practice, that's a skill set that's transferable anywhere.
Right.
Finance, accounting, retail, you know, again, aviation. Anywhere you've got data and you need to learn how to operate and how to act based on the findings from analyzing your data.
Right.
Anybody can use that insight. So my background in PT has been in the cancer world.
Right.
I ran two big clinical trials at the Department of Defense, the Naval Hospital in Bethesda.
Right.
We enrolled a lot of patients, big study. We took a lot of data on each of our patients. We took in 2,200 variables on each patient.
2,200.
That's a lot. That's a lot of information. So we comorbidities. You just think about shoulder range of motion, right? Flexion, internal, external rotation, extension. There's four variables there.
But 2,200.
2,200 is a lot.
On each patient.
Yep. Each patient. Lab data.
Okay. Well, that's
comorbidities.
That,
so you get into that.
Okay,
you can see how the numbers add up.
Okay. All right. I'll give you that.
So the data really was, it was a big data set. And in 2004, I ran into a statistician who was doing machine learning and predictive analytics using big data algorithms. And at that time, nobody was talking about big data. So I always say I'm kind of like the expert by default, right? I got into something that no one else was doing. I was doing a lot of it. And here I am talking about how we used predictive analytics in the cancer population to be able to identify risk factor clusters that helped us with early identification of side effects from cancer treatment, like lymphedema, fatigue, shoulder complications and upper quadrant complications, postural deficits. We were able to predict the onset and predict the recovery because of that type of modeling.
So, and because you had so much information.
Because we had so much data, and because we had the platform that could help us use that data and mine it.
So did you hear the announcement yesterday from the APTA about their registry?
Yes. Yep.
So what are your thoughts? I mean, this sounds similar. You're going to have a lot of information coming together,
yes.
And you're smiling like you don't want to tell me what you think.
No, I'm smiling because I think the registry is our future.
It has to be, right?
Absolutely. And that was one of my tweets today. I said, you know, in God we trust, everyone else just needs to bring data. So
That should be a damn t-shirt.
It is, actually. I've seen people at NIH, I work at NIH, and I see really smart people there, and they wear t-shirts like that.
Yes.
So the registry actually has a very interesting beginning, and I was with it for a lot of the genesis. When I was on the board of directors, I had the opportunity to help to stand up the registry project. So from its infancy, we used to have a program called the National Outcomes Database way back in early 2000s. And it was sort of, it gave us the framework to begin to develop what is now the PT Outcomes Registry. So being on the board at that time, having the knowledge and expertise that I have in statistics and technology, Paul Rocker at the time appointed me to have the registry as my project. And so I took that on and worked very closely with Justin Moore, Mark Goldstein, who was the director of research at the time. Heather Litvinoff came on board as the director of quality. You know, really, it was a rock star team from the beginning. And it was bumpy and it was rocky. And there were mistakes that we made.
You've got to make mistakes at the beginning.
But you know what? The reason that we're in the place where we can launch that today and confidently say that we're going to be able to get actionable insight from our data is because we hit some of those barriers and we were able to make adjustments.
Right, you knew how to get over
it. We did it the right way, and that's the key. And so I was stood in that room yesterday just beaming. I was so happy and so excited to see.
Should be.
That registry is going to change the way we treat patients.
I hope so.
Oh.
It's a giant research project that we all get to benefit from constantly.
I know, and people like me who are big
You're
data nerds.
You're geeking out.
We're so excited.
All right, so chronic disease, because you worked with cancer. Do you know Leslie Waltke?
Oh, I love Leslie.
Had her on the show, and
she's amazing.
Loved it.
Yep.
Remember, what I love a lot is, I mean, I love talking to people like you. I love talking to people like all the guests I have on the show. What I really like is when I talk to someone, and we release the episode, and then like a month later, I get an email from someone or a tweet or anything, and someone goes, "Heard that episode, moved me to do this. I'm going to change how I practice or whatever."
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn, someone, because I stand in my room a lot, or I stand here at a bar at CSM and I just talk to people, and I forget that people besides my mom download the show and listen. Because my mom downloads every damn episode.
Yeah.
She's not a physician, she's not in healthcare at all, but she's like, "I just think it's really interesting what you're talking about." She has no idea what we're talking about. Mom, I understand you have no idea what we're talking about right
now.
It's
good for your stats, though.
But it's good for my stats.
Take
I get
it.
One extra download per show.
That's right.
So chronic disease management is the sweet spot for the future of PT. Why doesn't anybody but us know this? How do we not? Where are
so
we not
I would, I would, I would, I'm going to argue with you there and say we don't even know it.
Okay.
We in physical therapy don't even know it because we have not moved and we're hesitant to move to that place. Chronic disease management is proactive. It's prospective. It's not waiting for people to have an episode, right? So we chronic disease. There's preventing the disease, right?
Okay.
So exercise is medicine.
We know that.
And exercise can help us prevent diseases like diabetes and cancer. But if you go a step beyond that into the chronic disease population, so the person who has diabetes, the person who has cancer,
who already has
MS, let's even take that, right? Chronic disease, chronic condition over a lifetime, there are so many ways that we can intervene proactively. Let's not wait for the diabetic to have an amputation or a severe vascular wound and have to manage that condition. Why aren't we
Beat
doing...
Beat it before it comes.
Absolutely. We know they have diabetes. We know they're at risk for severe neuropathies, decreased sensation, altered gait pattern because of that. And because of all of those things, they're going to end up with hot spots on their foot, they're going to end up with a wound, and it may not heal, and then they're going to end up with an amputation. If we can be on the front line doing a gait assessment and an analysis, whoa,
right.
All right, I see that severe inversion with your gait pattern. Let's change that now before it becomes a problem in 10 years and you have to lose your limb.
We have to understand that as a profession first,
yeah.
And then how we communicate that, because we know, I mean, even my parents don't really know all the things that I could do as a physical therapist. They have no idea.
Yeah. Well, and I feel as though there are some in our profession who are very forward-looking and say, that's the spot, that's where we need to be, prevention. Secondary prevention.
Mike Eisenhart, huge
on
that.
Mike Eisenhart, I love that
man. That's his drum, man, he beats it all day.
But we are so fixated on episodic care. We're so fixated on shoulder impingement, patient has a problem, patient has a deficit, we treat that, we get them better in 15 visits,
you're done.
We're done. That episodic care model has worked for us in the past, that's how we got paid, but we are in such a different, fluctuating environment in healthcare. How do we show value? We show value by preventing the downstream late effects of cancer treatment, the downstream late effects of these diseases like diabetes and the amputation example I just gave you. That's our future, quite frankly.
Right.
That's the future. I mean, you're still going to have hip replacement, knee replacements. You're still going to have, you know, episodic care boxes that you're going to put patients in. You know, when you walk out of your cardiologist's office, if you have a cardiologist, you walk out of their office, they never say, "You're discharged."
Yeah.
Your cardiologist says,
I'm
going to see you in 6 months.
Right.
I'm going to see you in a year. That needs to be the mindset of every physical therapist. Everyone. Even if I've, quote unquote, cured your shoulder tendonitis, I want to see you in 6 months because biomechanically, I want to see how you're doing. I want to see how your strength is.
I want to
see
sure
how
it
you're
doesn't
lifting.
Get back to that.
Exactly. I want to see that you don't go back into that bad posture that got you there to begin with. That's the prevention mindset. For chronic disease population, they've already got deficits. How do we help to alleviate those? How do we help to prevent the actual impairments from occurring? There's a lot we can do there. And I just, I don't think we've really embraced that and found that sweet spot, because it's not ICD-9 episodic or ICD-10 in an episodic care box for 10 visits. You know?
No, you're right. And we need a hammer on that to keep going. I think a guy like Mike Eisenhardt is on the right path.
Oh, absolutely. Mike and I connected several years ago over the prospective surveillance model. He read my research work and he said...
What do those two terms together mean? I literally wrote that. Look, here are my notes.
Prospective
surveillance, what does that mean?
That means that we have a situation where we know an individual is at risk, right? So cancer we developed this.
Okay.
I know. Here's the thing I know. Somebody gets diagnosed with cancer, I could go home tomorrow and they could call me and say, your mammogram showed something really bad. You have cancer.
Right.
And here I am, healthy status, right? I'm healthy today. I'm going to work. I'm working out. I'm going to the gym. And tomorrow I have cancer. Right? So I do not have a major functional deficit right now. And even if I do, let's identify and measure at what someone's baseline is. So today, at the diagnosis of cancer, let's take a measurement and identify what's your strength like, what's your functional activity level, what's your range of motion, what's your limb volume. Because here's what I know about cancer treatment. It's horrific, and it's going to do terrible things to your body that are going to many times result in functional decline. I know that. So knowing that, why don't we prospectively put in a surveillance program in place and prospectively monitor individuals at intervals going through cancer treatment?
Okay, so prospective surveillance model.
We evaluate individuals at baseline, at the point of diagnosis, before they have surgery, radiation, chemo. Okay. I know what's normal. I know what I want to get them back to.
Or their normal issue.
I know what their normal is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, normal is the setting on the dryer, right? Normal is what it is for you or me at this given time.
Right.
So I want to know that before they incur surgery, chemo, radiation. I'm going to follow them 1 month, every 3 months during cancer treatment. Cancer treatment's protracted over a course of a year, sometimes 5 years. So if I can follow them at intervals and just simply reassess and compare it to baseline, here's your normal. This is where you've changed. This is what's meaningful. Let's intervene now to prevent that from becoming a frozen shoulder in 3 years. Let's intervene now to prevent that from becoming chronic lymphedema in a year. And so the prospective surveillance model is what we based our cancer morbidity studies on when I was at the DOD. We've published probably 25 articles, peer review, about the effectiveness of this model in helping with early identification and early management of impairments related to cancer treatment. It has changed the way we treat cancer patients around the world, which
like
is kind of cool.
Yes. So is this why is an overlooked need for functional assessment and triage in the relatively well, because that's where we get our baseline?
Yeah. So think about people who have multiple comorbidities. The person who has hypertension, atherosclerosis, you know, maybe a little bit of early COPD, they get up every day and they go to work. They're fatigued. You know, they don't have good cardiorespiratory status. They maybe can't get through their whole day. So you've got this population of people who are well on the surface. You know, I call them the working wounded or the working warriors.
The walking well.
The walking well, yes. Or the walking ill. But, you know, they get through their day. They have pain. They have some level of dysfunction, but they're able, they manage, right? Well, here's what happens is over time, if that condition's not managed or that impairment's not managed, it tends to worsen, right? It tends to decline over time. Cardiorespiratory status, if we're not maximizing it or we're not increasing it, we'll tend to lose it over time, especially under circumstances like that when there is concomitant impairment. So what can we do to help to manage that walking wounded population that, you know, gets up and goes to work every day with all of these chronic comorbidities? We should be much more proactive in assessing them and managing them. These are the people that I want to see every 6 months in my clinic, just to reassess how you're doing with your exercise program, what are you doing as far as activity, walking, strength training, balance deficits. You know, let's just do an assessment and see where there's change. And if there's no change, great, I'm going to see you in 6 months. But if there is change that's meaningful,
let's affect it now.
Let me have you come in next week, and let's see you a couple times next week to see what we can do to mitigate this.
Okay, I like that.
To get rid of it. That's really the crux of prospective surveillance.
That's the place PT needs to be.
Yeah, because if I've got a prospective surveillance model, I can assess, and then I can triage. When I see something change that's meaningful, you know what? I'll see you in 3 months if everything's good. If not, come on in. Let's spend a couple of visits. And today, right, if you've got a deficit, I only need 2, maybe 3 visits. I can work with you, give you a home exercise program, see you back in a week or two. If we don't address it today, we address it in a year and a half.
Ounce of prevention, pound of cure.
Yeah, but here's the dirty secret, right? And I've talked with high-level executives in insurance companies, and they've said, Nicole, the dirty secret is insurance companies don't want to pay for that because they benefit from it.
Nope.
Their risk pool changes every year. They have people floating in and out. So the money that they put out to pay for prevention today doesn't benefit them in 2 years or 5 years when you actually see that come to fruition. Who does it benefit? It benefits Medicare. It benefits some other payer who that person moves into, the risk pool that person moves into.
And the patient. They benefit.
Right. So let's talk about that, right? Isn't that what this is supposed to be?
They're
all
the
about?
Person paying for it, the person
right.
that we're
exactly.
supposed to be talking about.
Absolutely. You're spot on with that.
So, okay, cool.
Yeah. So that has really been my model of care, my mantra that I have carried for probably the last 15 years is let's start early when we know that there are potential deficits that people are going to experience because they have Parkinson's or MS. There's going to be decline. We know that. Let's monitor them so that we can prevent falls, so that we can keep them in a good, strong physical status.
Right.
Keep them functional. Educate their caregivers before they have a catastrophic fall and break their hip or crack their head open or, you know, have a massive aneurysm.
Right.
And that way, you know, not only is it obviously preventing the downstream escalation of cost, but it's also, I mean, it's just good for the patients. They feel like somebody's here to help me prevent these things from happening. Someone's
right.
here to help me stay strong, to help me stay independent. It gives them license to do things, you know? I get a diagnosis of cancer. Oh, my God. I'm going to lay on the couch for 6 months. I can't move. I'm sick. I'm a patient. I can't do this. Those are the things that I think when we talk about making a difference in the individual's life, we know that treatments are going to do terrible things. So how do we maximize their function? How do we give them license to say, you know what? You're not a victim. Get up, move. Rest is not the best thing for you when you have cancer.
Nope.
Get up and move and exercise. And oh, by the way, here's how I'm going to help you do it safely. Here's how we're going to do it so you can prevent those downstream nasty things. And we need to introduce that from the beginning, from the point of diagnosis, so it's not an afterthought.
It's a big deal, and that's where our profession should be. I almost said is, but it's set up to be.
We need to move to that in a big way.
I like that. All right,
yes.
We'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to do three questions, and I want to do something called Boldness, Brass, and Stilettos. Women
that was
climbing
awesome.
The career ladder.
Yes.
Back in 60 seconds,
awesome.
The PT Podcast with Nicole Stout. Don't move.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
Hey, PT Pinecast listeners. I'm Eric Mara.
And I'm J.W. Matheson.
And we're from PT Inquest, a podcast that is also a journal club. Each week, we review and dissect a recent article that applies to physical therapy practice.
Or physiotherapy, as the weirdos on the other side of the pond call it.
Yeah, which pond are you talking about?
The Atlantic, or the Pacific, even Canada for that matter, everywhere but here.
Right. So check us out on the PT Podcast Network at ptpodcast.com.
You can become our 7th listener.
Yeah, J.W., we're down to 5 now. Steve stopped listening because he was getting annoyed with all your puns.
No puns. That reminds me of a sad story today. Abandoned cheese factory in France. It blew up. Horrible explosion. All that was left was debris.
Yeah, on second thought, probably better for people not to listen to this show.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Let's give a nice warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. All right, we're back on the PT Podcast with Nicole Stout. You can check her on Twitter at Nicole Stout PT. That's Nicole, S-T-O-U-T, PT. Or her website, 3eservicesllc.com.
You never go wrong with a good stout.
You never go wrong with a good stout. She's got her own beer mantra. How do you go wrong on the PT Podcast with that?
You don't.
Three questions from our sponsors at Aureus Medical. I know you're from the Northern Virginia area.
Yes.
But now you live in Florida.
Yes.
So what's somewhere else in the United States that you wouldn't mind practicing, since our sponsor does travel PT or permanent placements all over the country. Where's somewhere you wouldn't mind going and hanging your hat for a little while?
You know, I love Colorado.
Yeah.
It is
that
one of
is
my...
is the most common answer.
Is it really?
Because who doesn't want to go?
Yeah, I know. It's a big playground out there year-round.
Yeah.
It's just, and the people, the
hike,
setting,
run,
the
ski.
Environment. Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's just PT lifestyle. We tend to be very active people. Arizona, too. That's another one I'd take.
All right, cool. Second question. What's something you're either reading or just maybe just finished reading that's inspired you?
Great question. I just finished The Sunset Limited by Cormac McCarthy.
Okay, and what is that about?
Yeah, he tends to be a little bit of a dark writer, but this was really fascinating. It's about these two guys, and they're sitting at a table, and it's written literally in script form. They're having a conversation because one of the guys just tried to commit suicide this morning on the train platform, and the other guy saved his life.
That
and the guy
unique.
Who saved his life brought him to his house and said, let's sit down and talk about this, and it's their conversation that ensues.
Wow.
It's amazing because it's brief, but it's profound.
What is the name again?
It's called Sunset Limited. That was the name of the train that the guy tried to jump in front of.
Wow, that's kind of cool.
It makes you think about the good in life and hope that the guy who tried to kill himself would seemingly have everything in life. He was an educated professor and yet tried to kill himself because he has a very negative view that he's spun up in his mind about how the world is.
Wow.
And it's terrible for him.
Okay.
And the guy who saves his life is a relatively uneducated, poor man who has a tainted past, an addict, a prison term, but has all the hope in the world. It's a quick read, but it's pretty profound.
Sounds good to me. All right, third question is, who's someone in the field of physical therapy that we should know more about as the audience? Who's someone out there doing great things that's flying under the radar?
Ooh, let's see. You already know Mike Eisenhardt. I wouldn't say he's under the radar, though. I mean, he's busted onto the scene in a big way.
We need to talk about him more, but who's someone else that we should bring out? Who's a Mike Eisenhardt, you know, 3 years from now?
I'm going to go to my oncology world, right?
Okay.
Dr. Betsy Heil, Elizabeth Heil, is at the University of Oklahoma. She is a physical therapist researcher studying ovarian cancer and recovery, peripheral neuropathies, balance gait in that area. But the thing about Betsy is she is one of the only physical therapists in the country with a research lab of this magnitude who is a professor at the university and has an appointment in the cancer center. So she's not, a lot of physical therapist programs around the country have their PT faculty in the PT school, in the School of PT. And Betsy's got a dual appointment in the cancer center. She's probably one of the only people in the country that's doing the kind of work that she's doing at the level that she's at. She's participating in Energy, which is a national clinical trial collaborative.
Okay.
One of the only physical therapists in the country who's doing work at that level. Introducing ovarian cancer protocol that she's instituted at sites across the country. She's amazing, and she's super humble, and she would probably be like, what? Why are you talking about me?
Those are the kind of people I want
you
to bring up in that sort of situation.
She is groundbreaking in as a physical therapist in the cancer world.
All right. Boldness, brass, and stilettos. Women climbing the career ladder. That's something you wanted me to talk about. What does that mean? That's a hell of an intro.
Yep. The last 2 years at CSM, Ann Wendell and Carol Lewis.
Carol Lewis.
You know Carol Lewis.
Yeah,
everybody
Carol
knows
Who
Carol
doesn't
Lewis.
Know Carol?
She's my good, dear friend. I love her. And Lisa Saladin.
Haven't had her on the show yet.
You've got to get her.
Everybody says that.
Lisa's fabulous.
Her up.
Sandy Hilton. We've had a great group. And the last 2 years, we've done programming around women climbing the career ladder. And this was all sort of based on the Sheryl Sandberg phenomenon around Lean In. Sheryl Sandberg is now a COO of Facebook.
Okay.
Formerly with Google, an executive with Google, came to Facebook.
It was a slightly large
company. She wrote, Livin' Large.
She's
Livin' Large. I mean, she's amazing. So she wrote this book called Lean In. And she talks about how women need to be a little bossy, right? We need to, this is where the whole bossy thing came from. Little girls who are bossy are told to temper their attitude. And so Sheryl Sandberg wrote the book Lean In about how women need to really, you need to lean in. You need to put yourself out there. You need to be a little bit aggressive. And people are not always going to look positively on you when you do that, but
because you're a female?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't care.
There's
I've
a
had
huge
lots of female
no,
bosses,
I know, but I'll tell you, there's a huge body of research around if women are aggressive in the workplace, put themselves out there, they aggressively advocate for themselves, they try to self-promote, they are looked upon very unfavorably.
Really?
Whereas if their male colleagues do the same, they are frequently promoted. So we put together Boldness, Brass, and Stilettos because we said, guess what? We need to give women, we wanted to create a forum for them to talk about the things that they've done to put themselves out there, the barriers that they've faced in doing that. We just felt like it was really a great movement for women to come together in the PT world and say, you know what, this profession is dominated by women. We are the majority of membership, we're the majority of licensed therapists, and yet, are we leading? Are we stepping in? Are we leading? And the conversations, I'll tell you, we had packed rooms the last 2 years at CSM, and women in that room that were standing up and saying, you know, I'm going to walk out of here and I'm going to feel like I need to go in and I need to ask for a promotion. I need to add, I didn't get this, I got passed over for this, you know, position, and I'm going to go in and I'm going to advocate for myself. Or we had a woman stand up last year and say, this is the first time I've ever stood up in a public forum and spoken. I mean, that, you know, so how do we empower women to stand up, to speak for themselves, to advocate for themselves, and not to feel timid? You know, we women, we're so different than men. We feel like we're going to put our heads down, we're going to work through it, we're going to get through it.
Not all men are extroverts. Not all men would stand up and talk.
Really, it's not even an introvert-extrovert thing. It's more about self-promotion.
But not all men self-promote.
All men self-promote. Yes, they do. And women don't.
Wait, you can't
women
possibly.
Don't. You can't. A lot of women don't.
You can't do that. You can't tell me I can't stereotype all women while you're stereotyping all men.
A lot of men. All right. I'll retract the all men. Men are much more likely to self-advocate than women are.
I mean, I would
it's
be.
It's true.
Listen, you're the research person. I would say, show me the research on that.
All right, I'll send it to you.
But what I'm saying is, like, I don't know that. I mean, I had 11 guys in my PT program. I'm the big mouth. There were 10 other guys who weren't. But I'm not saying this isn't what you're saying isn't true. I'm saying you can't stereotype men at the same time you're telling me not to stereotype women.
That's not at all what I'm saying. The stereotype of women is that we don't put ourselves forward. We don't put ourselves out there. That's absolutely.
You do.
So there are women who do. And when we do it, it's like the whack-a-mole game. When you stick your head up and you try to say, hey, I did this and it's great and I should be promoted, a lot of us get whacked down. In fact, more women get promoted when men advocate for them than when they advocate for themselves.
All right.
And that I will send to you. That's evident. I mean, there's evidence
that supports
that.
I have no research to counteract that because I'm not a research guy. But you can't just say all men are going to stand up and say something. You can't.
Well, what I'm saying is that men are much more likely to advocate for themselves, and they're more likely to elevate other men who they think are in a role that should be elevated over women who are in a very similar role with a similar skill set.
Okay.
So women don't tend to advocate for themselves the same way that men do. And they don't, when they do advocate, they tend to be looked down upon rather than elevated.
So that's why they don't?
So,
Because of how it's reacted to. Okay. Yeah, at least you guys are getting together and you're doing something positive. You're talking about it.
Oh, my gosh. It was just great. The boldness. And we came up with the title like that, Boldness, Brass, and Stilettos. Because, you know, you got to be a woman and you got to wear your high heels. But you got to have some balls, you know, to put it out there, too. So.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. All right. So every episode that we record is a pint. And before we're done with pints, we do shots. Not those kind of shots. Relax. I'm not going to hit that.
Oh, good. Okay,
it's early in the night. Parting shot of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum. Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT.
As well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at optumfellowship.com.
What's something you would want the audience to be left with in terms of a parting shot of wisdom that you've picked up over the years that you've been in this PT game, and not necessarily PT, FAA and statistics and research and all that?
Yeah.
What's something you want to leave the audience with?
I think it's important for people, especially in our profession, to realize your skill set in your eyes that you look at patients and you analyze problems is so different than other practitioners in medicine. We look at people so differently because of our background in mechanics and you know, our analysis and our problem-solving skills.
My professor, Julie Reese, taught me neuro, taught me gait. He's like, you're never going to watch someone walk down
Absolutely.
The street the same way. And she's right.
Gosh.
I don't. I can't.
Or at the mall or on the running trail. You
can't
do it. But don't ever discount that you look at individuals with different eyes than your physician colleagues. And don't hesitate to point that out to them in a politically correct way. Don't insult them. But it's so easy for them to overlook simple biomechanical issues that you and I see that our physician colleagues don't. So don't hesitate to understand or recognize that your skill set is so different and that it's very transferable, right? The problem-solving skills that we hone every day, taking in all of the data and information from our patients, our objective measures, the subjective measures, we synthesize that in our brains in a second.
Yeah.
Don't hesitate to recognize that is an invaluable skill that you can take with you anywhere, even in aviation, right?
Even for bird strikes.
Even for bird strikes, you know? I think those are sort of the words of wisdom that I would say. I think it's, we don't realize sometimes how transferable our skill set is to help inform our other professional colleagues. We don't realize how different our perspective is, and we bring stuff to the table that's very different, that helps to inform a plan of care, helps to inform our physician colleagues, and that they have aha moments sometimes when we bring information that's different than what they saw.
I like it. Nicole Stout, you can reach her online at Nicole Stout PT, at Nicole Stout PT. If you want to follow her, and the website is 3eservicesllc.com. You can't go wrong with a strong stout.
You never go wrong with a stout. That's what I always say. I'm like, never can't go wrong with a good stout.
I like it. Appreciate you taking time out at a busy event like CSM. Biggest one we've ever had. 14,000
awesome.
PTs.
Oh, my gosh. You know, and I'm going to give a shout out here to Bonnie Pavanelli.
Okay.
Yeah, see, you looked at me like that because...
No, I've heard the name. Who
yeah,
is that?
Yeah, you've heard the name, but very few people know. Bonnie Pavanelli is an APTA. She's been at APTA for a gazillion years. She is the SVP that's responsible for meetings and membership. Bonnie is she is the nuts and bolts, the gears that run
she's
behind
the scenes.
She's
the person who makes sure
at
Sharon
every
Dunn
one of
is
these
where she needs to be.
She's the one who, she's Sharon Dunn Sherpa to this week. I've seen her.
Right, so that's why I know
Bonnie
her
Bonnie is the person whose team, her team, puts together every conference that you go to. And I will tell you, it is a thankless job, and it is time-consuming, and they do a stellar job. Bonnie Pavanelli is amazing.
I like it. Nicole
Stout. Undersung hero.
Appreciate you coming on the show and having a drink with us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. This was fun. Perfect. I hope you do a lot of editing because I swore in there a couple times.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast, LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO, Jimmy McKay.
With executive producer Rachel German from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee.
And CBO, Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Podcasting. It's a great way to reach a huge audience. We're portable, free to download, and can be heard across the planet. Here on the PT Pinecast, we can paint a picture for your company to help spread your message to physical therapists across the world. With our show, we can put pictures into people's minds. Here, let me show you what I mean. Like if I push this button right here, I can take you back to the Jurassic era when T-Rex roamed the earth. And when I click on this,
I'm behind the wheel of a race car, driving fast and turning left. Shake it back, boys.
We paint pictures with sound and can paint a picture of your company on our show that'll leave an impression. To have us paint for you and spread your message to PTs across the world, contact us online at ptpinecast.com. Let's see what this button does.